My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now. I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to save you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you about these times. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. When the market was roaring last week, I warned you, didn't think it would last. Eventually, there'd be more bad news about the pandemic, and we would get slammed again. And that's exactly what happened today. Dow plummeting 974 points. S&P plunging 4.41%. NASDAQ also nosediving 4.41%. Because last night, the president gave us a pretty downbeat, realistic forecast for COVID-19 fatalities. If you've been following the experts, then a potential death toll in the hundreds of thousands might not have surprised you. But for a lot of investors, it was a rude awakening. I can't blame anyone for selling after that miserable first quarter with very little good news on any front in the battle against COVID. Let's be real. This market is an incredibly leaky ship. If you've been laid off, if you're having health problems, if you're, someone in your family is hurt, you're supporting a loved one who's out of work, then you're most likely going to have to sell stocks to get through this period. People need cash. You can't fight that kind of selling. That's what we're seeing. So why not simply dump everything, flee, maybe get for the hills, get out ahead of these people? Well, all right, I'm not going to, if you need the money, you never know, you know I'm not going to fight it. But let me give you a contrarian case for at least sitting tight, okay? Last week, the S&P 500 rallied nearly 20% after Congress passed a $2.2 trillion rescue package for everybody, workers, the unemployed, small business, big business. Think of it as life support for the economy while so much commerce is on hiatus. But we've now given up a big chunk of those gains on the sad realization that life support isn't the same as real customer stimulus. You can't stimulate the economy without demand. And there'll be no demand until we beat the virus. Don't get me wrong. We absolutely had to pass this bill. Without it, our country's economy could have just shut down tens of millions of people. All those people work for these now desperate small, medium-sized businesses that could be thrown out of work. It prevents this pandemic from turning into an economic apocalypse that's huge. And it was great that it got done. However, no amount of federal cash can make consumers want to get their hair cut or their nails done. You can't go out and grab a beer when all the bars are closed. It's a new world. It's a world where companies with the strongest balance sheets will survive and ultimately thrive, while the little guys are more likely to get wiped out. A lot of the show is going to be about that. I was on Halftime with my buddy Scott Wapner today. He's hosting a special tonight after the show. And we were almost all negative about the market right now. It's just kind of a foregone conclusion. It's going lower. However, one of the panelists, Karen Firestone, one of my classmates at Harvard, who's whip smart and a terrific all-around friend, said something that bears repeating. This will end. And when it does, you won't be able to buy stocks at a discount because the market will turn into a rocket ship. That means you can't wait for the ideal moment to buy. You have to pick up stocks gradually on the way down. Even though we know, look, I know today was terrible. Once we beat this virus, we could have a much bigger rally than the one we just had last week. But we're not there yet. We're not. I can't be constructive yet. I'll get more constructive when we give up last week's gains, when we're retesting in March lows. I think that's a better time to buy. And I'll feel better when we get closer to actually bending the curve. The outbreak's still spreading at an exponential pace, and we're a long way from the peak in infections. We need some time to pass. I also added something when I spoke with Karen and the team. I told Karen that I remember all those really smart people in our class who went on to med school, the truly brilliant ones who weren't named Bill Gates or Steve Ballmer, the two most notable members of the class of 77. I don't want to bet against those doctors, those scientists. Yet that's exactly what you're doing if you keep selling all the way down or if you don't start picking something up into the weakness. This is not like the run-up to the Great Recession when the White House and the Federal Reserve were committed to doing absolutely nothing. They only took action after the financial system collapsed.
They knew nothing!
This time, our government's learned its lesson. They're being a lot more proactive. They read the papers. They see this has got to get unstuck. They unstick it. Plus, it's not just the government. This time, many businesses are really going out of their way to help us cope with the pandemic, leading the way as a positive force for change. Few executives have been more forceful or relentless in championing this cause than our first guest, Chuck Robbins, the CEO of Cisco Systems. Mr. Robbins, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, it's great to be here, Jim.
All right. So, Chuck, you're really taking the leadership role now. $225 million commitment to COVID-19 response, support offers to customers. Most importantly, your leadership during COVID-19 crisis. First person to organize, get people in Silicon Valley to be involved. It sounds like that you are taking the role of the corporate citizen far more than we used to think used to happen in corporate America.
Well, Jim, I think that we all recognize that this is an unprecedented situation, and we all have to react and respond in the ways that we can. And, you know, from the call that we set up 2.5 weeks ago to the work we've been doing with the most vulnerable in Silicon Valley, there's lots of people working with the food bank. We've been rallying volunteers. We're shipping equipment into hospitals so nurses can do virtual intake of patients to remove themselves from the risk. I mean, there's a lot going on. And I'll tell you, there are lots of companies doing a lot of great things right now. I would say that everyone has stepped up, and it's just been impressive to see the business community rally around this issue.
I think you've pretty much told your people, if you have something, a way to do it, a way to save a life, a way to help anybody, just go do it. It sounds like there's a lot of improvisation that's working.
Well, they're actually telling me what they're doing, Jim. We've had some folks in the UK that started 3D printing surgical shields and masks. I got an email the other day where my team's doing it in Krakow. We started doing it in San Jose this week. And we're actually taking the video units off our desks. We have thousands of video units that are sitting on desks while people are working from home. And we've been packing them up, sanitizing them, and sending them into these hospitals where they're literally in New York. They're going to be able to do patient intake virtually on the other side of video so that just to minimize the risk. So, but the teams are working and putting networking in the new hospitals that are being built. I mean, they got video going into nursing homes to help patients spend time with their family. I mean, it's unbelievable what they're doing. And this is happening in companies all around the world.
Now Chuck, you have a business, WebEx. It's always been a good business. It sounds like it could become maybe one of your biggest businesses. The number of meetings, phone calls, minutes that are occurring, it's extraordinary.
It has been amazing. And I want to just call out my team, who have just done an exceptional job. The explosion over the last few weeks has been extraordinary. And just to give you some statistics, since we just finished March, we did almost 15 billion person meeting minutes during the month of March, almost 330 million users. We did 4 million plus meetings per day. And again, we don't count one-on-ones as a meeting. These are multi-people meetings. There's so much going on. Asia's 3 times the volume they were before the COVID outbreak. Europe is 4 times, and the Americas is 2.5 times, and all are growing still. So the teams have done an amazing job and really have scaled the platform in ways that you never would have dreamed possible.
The people I know who use your product use it not just because of the quality, but they feel the security is very, very strong, and they need that.
Well, Jim, I mean, look, we believe that security is the most important thing with our customers. And we've said for several years, we believe privacy is a basic human right. And so you either believe that or you don't. We have designed and built security into the products from the beginning. We don't believe you should have to opt into security. We think it should be there naturally, including end-to-end encryption. You know, the thing about your data is that it's your data. And we won't rent it. We don't sell it. We don't have third parties doing transcription. We do that in-house for you. And, you know, this technology now in particular is being used in massively distributed ways where people are talking about companies' intellectual property, organizations' intellectual property, government issues. So it has to be secure. We have to guarantee the privacy, and that's what we're committed to do. We built it that way from the beginning.
This is the new world, Chuck. Are we all going to decide that, you know what, it's not so bad to be at home?
Well, I think we've all discovered that we can be much more productive in this environment than we probably thought we could. I spoke to a CEO of a large investment bank who said, if you'd have told me 90 days ago that 95% of my people would be working from home and we'd be productive and running the firm the way we are, I wouldn't have believed it, but we are. And so I think, you know, longer term, it's going to change how we think about work. And I think it will have a profound impact on how we think about our employees, their productivity, our our buildings, our campuses, our commercial real estate. And but we'll worry about that when we get through this crisis.
All right, Chuck Robbins, thank you for everything that you're doing to really rise to the occasion. And I'm so glad that business for WebEx is working out for you. Always great to see you, sir. Keep it up.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for your leadership on these important topics.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. Much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusives with PVH, Nestle, and ResMed. How about what Chuck Robbins is doing with Cisco? Stay with me.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Right now, we just don't have enough coronavirus tests, gowns, masks. But most importantly, we don't have enough ventilators for the people who get really sick. I think we need to do everything in our power to make more. Otherwise, this pandemic gets a lot more lethal. Which brings me to ResMed. That's a medical technology company focused on respiratory disorders. In the past, they've been synonymous with sleep apnea machines. But ResMed also makes ventilators, and management says they're looking to double or even triple production. Plus, we might be able to retrofit their other machines into makeshift ventilators. It's huge. So let's take a closer look with Mick Farrell. He's the CEO of ResMed. Learn more about how his company can help fight COVID-19. He's got a terrific company. I'm well familiar with it. Mr. Farrell, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, it's great to be back. I wish it was under better circumstances, but happy to talk about the COVID-19 emergency and how ResMed is here to help.
Well, you have put a number of your people, there's a ResMed statement about COVID-19, 7,500 ResMedians are working in 140 countries. I mean, that's incredible. You've really made it a task force. It's a mission for you.
It is, Jim. We have a global COVID-19 task force. We meet every day. We have a global meeting twice weekly where we have people from Europe, from Asia and Americas all getting together. We've been on this for 90 days. We were there in Wuhan, in Hubei province, China, 90 days ago, ramping up our manufacturing from Shanghai province over to Wuhan. And we followed it through China. We saw the crisis go through Asia. We ramped up our Singapore manufacturing plant. We've now seen Europe ramp up, and now the United States, particularly New York, California, Washington, and Michigan. And we're ramping up our Sydney, Singapore plants to maximum capacity. We're going to double, triple or more our non-invasive ventilators, invasive ventilators, and do more than 10 times the volumes of our ventilation masks and tubing and accessories to take care of COVID-19 patients so that we keep them breathing while their own immune systems fight the disease.
So what is, when we're speaking about doubling and triple, what is the base? How many are we talking about?
Well, Jim, we are the number one provider globally of CPAP manufacturing. Mm-hmm. We are number one or number two globally in non-invasive ventilation manufacturing. If you include all ventilators, we're in the top three or top five in all 140 countries. Last year, we made 14 million masks, okay, full mask systems. We made more than 2.5 million flow generator systems, including CPAPs, non-invasive ventilators, and invasive ventilators. If you break it down to just the ventilators, we made tens of thousands of ventilators last year in 2019. We're going to do double that and triple that. And we're going here in real time, ramping up our Singapore plant, our Sydney plant. We're shipping to Italy, all across Western Europe. And I was on the phone with FEMA last week, and a great colonel in the US Army, I'd call that group at FEMA sort of like the General Schwarzkopf of mm-hmm. this war on COVID-19. And we are getting products to FEMA, but also directly to New York hospitals in California, and to healthcare systems and to states and cities, Jim.
Okay, I want to understand the difference between what the CPAP machines can do and the ventilation machines can do and the bilateral respiratory devices, because there's some confusion. I understand that the CPAP can be converted and that all of these can actually be lifesavers.
Jim, there's a lot of relationships between the different type of ventilators. Let me break it down for you. There's the highest end ventilators, which are the invasive ventilators. These are used in the critical care unit, the CCU, the ICU, and step down wards. And then there are non-invasive ventilators, and then there are bi-level ventilators. And if you think of CPAP, CPAP is kind of like the chassis of a car. And, you know, it's kind of like a four-cylinder car, but we can put a V8 engine in it with extra motor power, extra software, extra sensors to ramp it up to become a non-invasive ventilator. And we can ramp up the production of those bi-level ventilators and those non-invasive ventilators by 10x and beyond what we've got. So we've got almost unlimited capacity to meet the needs on final manufacturing. People keep talking in the media about a ventilation manufacturing problem. It's not a final ventilator manufacturing problem. It's a parts problem. We have over 500 parts going into these advanced sort of V8 level invasive ventilators and non-invasive ventilators. And as people come to help, we tell them, don't buy the parts that we can use to make these at scale. Help us make the parts. And when we get genuine offers from automotive companies, aerospace companies, and defense companies, and we've had hundreds of offers, we say, fantastic. Don't make a ventilator and buy these parts. Make these 10 parts for us and let us scale, which we can, between us and our competitors to meet the demands of COVID-19.
Gotcha. Now, have you been in contact with the legendary Elon Musk, who I know our own Phil LeBeau is saying Tesla deserves some credit for coming through. But at the same time, there are complainers who say, listen, all that he really is shipping not ventilators, but CPAPs. I find it to quibble. Anybody who gives anything is okay with me. But I do want to try to get your definition of what he's doing.
Yeah, Jim, look, my take on that, and we've had offers from Tesla, from many other automotive manufacturers, from some of the biggest aerospace companies in the world and defense companies who can help with O-rings and screens and screws. Look, Tesla can help us with lithium-ion batteries. That's an area that we might be rate limited in. I think it's great what Elon did. He went up and bought, you know, what I would call bi-level, non-invasive ventilators from a platform of ours from 5 years ago from Asia and brought 1,000 of them over to New York. All that help, that's help with logistics. That's fantastic. If there's product out there and you can move it for us, that's fantastic. We're ramping our plant up double, triple, and 10 times on the masks. And what we need help with is a couple of components, some shipping, and some opportunities to work directly with these hospitals and states so that we can get our products to the front lines, to the frontline heroes, those respiratory therapists, those respiratory nurses, pulmonary and critical care physicians, those people are the frontline heroes. These ventilators don't run themselves. We can make them, but now we need the people to set them up there in that ICU, CCU, and that whole ward devoted to COVID-19. Let's get them PPE, and let's have a whole ward devoted to non-invasive ventilation in hospitals across New York and around the country.
I need one last question. Governor Cuomo today said that only about 20% of the people who are ventilators live. That's not I think that's too low. You know these things. Is that too low?
Look, the data on this are moving on a day-by-day basis, and we've seen different stuff out of China, Italy, and the US. The survival rate is tough when you get onto a critical care ventilator because by that time you've got a lot of fluid buildup in your lungs. But if we catch you early on a non-invasive ventilator or early enough on an invasive ventilator, survival rates can improve.
Got it. Mick Farrell, thank you for everything you're doing. You didn't even get to talk about your main product that everybody loves, that you're taking share and taking names. And we've loved your stock, as you know, ever since you were on and then before then. That's ResMed, RMD, doing the right thing. And by the way, what a fabulous company. Mad Money's back after the break. With the market getting mauled again, you got to understand that this sell-off is nothing like what happened a month ago when everything got hammered indiscriminately. This time, we're actually starting to see some real differentiation. It's important for your portfolio. The coronavirus winners are holding up a heck of a lot better than the losers. Take Nestle. It's the Swiss packaged foods powerhouse with a stock that barely got dinged today. And no wonder Nestle is not only a classic recession-proof business, it also has a major presence in categories that are flying off the shelves thanks to the lockdowns. Bottled water, candy, coffee, frozen foods, ice cream. We know Nestle's in just incredible shape. They reported a very solid quarter mid-February. They're also working hard to protect their employees and keep the world supplied with food. So let's take a closer look with Mark Schneider. He's the CEO of Nestle, one of the world's largest food companies. Mr. Schneider, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Welcome back, and glad to be on the show.
Well, sir, you have a remarkable company, not just because of the breadth of product that you have, but you're also an incredibly charitable company. But what I want to talk about in this terrible age of COVID is, as the world's largest food company, how are you able to get food to the supermarkets and fill all those shelves that are constantly having to be restocked? Because I can't find your stuff in the supermarket a lot because it just snapped up constantly.
Look, this was a tremendous global surge in demand as people were stocking their pantries in order to get prepared and spend more time at home. And so we're scrambling. We're working as hard as we can. We know this is our main purpose at this hour, to be sure that shelves and pantries are stocked and people have essential food and beverage products. But of course, this was an upsurge that no one got prepared for, and we're scrambling to meet demand and working hard at it.
One of the things that I think that you guys do better than almost anybody, that I think people don't talk enough about, pets, pet care. It's really shining here. And I want you to mention it because we've talked about beverages, nutrition, water is really amazing. But your mix of what you're selling, iconic and local brands for pets, doing incredibly well.
You're right, and pets need to be fed in this crisis too, so we saw some stocking up there as well. But even before the crisis, this is one of our best-performing categories, up 7% for last year. We just actually announced today another acquisition in the pet food space, Lily's Kitchen, based in the UK, high-end natural pet food for dogs and cats. So this is a tremendous category with huge potential down the road.
You're doing something that I think a lot of food companies have not been able to do successfully. Your premiumization is working, whether it be vegan, sustainability, organic, naturalization. Every single one of these initiatives seems to be able to make it so that your profitability is very strong.
You're absolutely right, Jim. These are the trends that we are seeing. We're catering to those. We've been working patiently at improving our products and to meet those demands. And I think those things will stay on trend going forward through this crisis. So it's a worthwhile endeavor to keep working on those.
When you were on last, we talked about the idea of a bottle, of a plastic bottle, perhaps not being not going to end up in the Pacific, in the giant island. How's that going?
Yeah, so sustainable packaging is a key area. Sustainable packaging is an area where people report directly to me because we need to make progress across the full spectrum of our products. So biodegradable is one solution. Reusable is another one. And, of course, we want to make our products recyclable by the year 2025. We're making good progress towards that. Big issue for this year is going to be the elimination of paper, plastic straws, and to replace those with paper straws. So all of these initiatives are working well and making good progress.
My kids and I joke at the end of the day. I have a daughter who lives in Madrid, sadly, very tough. A daughter lives in Greenwich Village. And we do FaceTime and we all laugh because the only thing that makes us really happy is reading a ton of candy. It makes us happy. And I bet you we cannot be alone.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is a time where snacking and comfort food is just as important as essential nutrients. And, you know, it's a stressful period for all of us. And so making sure that those products continue to be available is a big part of our job. The heroes of the hour are clearly our frontline workers that are doing tremendous jobs in our factories and distribution centers and quality assurance labs to be sure that that happens.
Now, when you... There are not enough talk. I was watching on our 5 o'clock show the idea, the people who bring food from your factories to the store, the most unprotected people in the world, other than the people in the healthcare business. How are they faring?
Look, I mean, this is exactly what I mean when I say that the frontline workers are the people I admire the most. It's our job to really give them every help and support necessary. That means, for example, enhanced hygiene protocols, safety and protection gear when necessary. And it also means, you know, from a top management perspective, we really try to spend time with them. So my colleagues and I, we do spend time regularly at distribution centers and factories to be sure that frontline workers understand we're with them in this.
Now, Mark, the idea, there are a lot of people who have always been well employed. I never thought they'd ever be on the unemployment line, never thought that they would ever be short of food. You're doing something about that, too, right?
Yes. So we're donating where we can across the 187 countries in the world where we're present. You know, this is a global problem, and hence we need to help where we can. We want to be a good neighbor in the communities where we're present. So we're donating to food banks, Meals on Wheels in America. We're giving donations to be sure that food reaches people who cannot leave their homes. We're supplying hospitals with medical nutrition. We're sharing some of the medical protocols now for people that need to be on a respirator. So lots of things that are happening across the full spectrum, what we can do to help mitigate this crisis.
And how is the food service business? Because I know that we've had a number of companies, like Conagra we had yesterday, they're doing well in the supermarket. But you know, the other side, there's a lot of offices and businesses that are closed right now.
Absolutely. And food service, all in all, is about 10% of our revenues. And that, of course, is hard hit. We're working closely with our food service partners because many of these businesses, of course, are facing tremendous stress, and we want to be sure they make it through this period. But yes, it's a negative on the food service side. It's a positive on the in-home consumption.
But I would have to believe that the positive on in-home over does, let's say, exceed what could be the downside from the food service.
It does, but do keep in mind you have to look at this through the full cycle. So right now, of course, people are stocking up, but we all hope that this period that we spend in our homes is a temporary one. And then over time, I think the overall trend towards more out-of-home consumption will come back. And, of course, pantries at some point will get destocked as well. So it's important not to look at it just on a one-week or one-quarter basis, but look at it more like on a one- or two-year basis.
I hope not, but I understand. Last question is from my wife. She said, you should ask Mr. Schneider whether he's ready for the onslaught of babies 9 months from now.
You know, infant nutrition is one of our biggest businesses, obviously this is a core category for us. We're ready for every surge that might happen. Every baby that gets born, you know, we are cheering it on.
Only silver lining in this whole thing. Mark Schneider, you are terrific. CEO of Nestle's. What an incredible company. Thank you so much for coming on Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim.
That is a great company. I wish one day we can get to the shares, buy some, because Nestle's is one of the best managed worldwide food companies, and they also have a pretty good reputation for charity. Mad Money's back in. At this point, we're mostly numb to the market's jaw-dropping declines. Oh, but we were down to 974 points today. Typical Wednesday. Takes a lot to surprise us these days, doesn't it? Consider the hideous decline in PVH. The apparel company we like so much is known, well, you know it as Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger. Here's a stock that was trading at 105 at the end of last year. It's now $32 after plummeting another 13% today. Investors were terrified of what the company might say when it reported. Turns out PVH, it did well this quarter. Company posted a solid top and bottom line beat, despite some slight misses on the margin front. But, and this is the mother of all buts, management also declined to give guidance for the next quarter, for the full year, suspended its dividend and buyback, and also gave some verbiage in the release, which makes me nervous. PVH simply doesn't know when the stores that carry its merchandise will be able to reopen. It's not like you need a new wardrobe when you can't even leave the house. I think it's important to know how they're handling the pandemic. So let's check in with Manny Chirico. He's the straight-shooting chairman and CEO of PVH Corp, trying to fill in the blanks here. Mr. Chirico, welcome back to Mad Money.
How are you, Jim? I wish we were together. At least we could give each other an elbow bump.
I wish we were together too, Manny. And I love the fact that you came on. I think there were people who said, you know what? Because he's in apparel, I bet she doesn't want to talk. It's the opposite. You come right out. I'm thinking of your company, Manny, as maybe the survivor during this period because of your balance sheet, the revolver you drew down, and I think you got a lot of staying power.
Thanks, Jim. I think that's a pretty accurate picture of us. You know, we have very low leverage overall. We have a very strong balance sheet, about $1.2 billion in cash and available borrowings. We also announced a few months ago that we would be selling our Speedo business, and that'll generate in the month of April another $170 million. So given our overall conservative capital structure, I think we have a tremendous amount of capability to weather the storm. But no retailer, no apparel retailer is built to be shut down. And that's what we basically are right now. We have our online business but that's doing really well. But our stores in North America, Europe, Asia, and Brazil are closed down because the government's made the right decision to have social distancing.
There are some of the larger department stores. I shuddered. Macy's was eliminated from the S&P 500 yesterday. It's great. It's an institution. they are not built to be shuttered either. How long do you think some of these department stores can stay closed?
Yeah, look, Jim, I think everyone is facing that challenge. I think Macy's, Jeff Gennett and his team is doing what's necessary to weather the storm. They've got substantial assets there that are they could be cash generating. I mean, I'm not going to speak for them, but clearly they're going to be a survivor when this is all over. And we have a great deal of confidence in that management team and that company that they'll weather the storm.
Manny, when I heard something you guys did, I told my wife, I said, let's go out and buy a lot of Tommy Hilfiger. You came up long when everyone else is coming up short. Personal protective equipment at Montefiore. I read this incredibly sad article in the Journal. Bronx Hospital is probably the number one most hurt hospital, and you were right there to help them.
Well, look, I'm on the board of Montefiore. That is an unbelievable institution led by Dr. Phil Azau. He's done an amazing job, and they service a community in the Bronx and also in Lower Westchester in some more affluent areas like White Plains Hospital. They do it. All of those, that entire hospital network does an amazing job. Their nurses and doctors are, you know, heroes in my mind for what they're doing during this crisis. And if we could help in a small way using our, you know, sourcing network in the Far East to help bring in first about a 1.5 million surgical masks, N95 masks, and three-ply masks, and also in the pipeline, another 5 million masks to help them through this storm. You know, it's our pleasure to do it, and it's our small way of contributing to the effort. And that's why I was down at the hospital making sure that the quality control of the masks that we were bringing in were going to meet the high standards that we have at Montefiore and in our overall healthcare system. So they're my heroes, and now, anything we could do to help them is great.
You're my hero because when you were at Montefiore, you discovered that you are not well, correct?
I'm fine, Jim. I discovered that I have the virus because of the testing and because I was going to be present there, and anybody who's going to be inside the hospital for an extended period of time needs to be tested. So I was tested, and I was kind of shocked when I found out that I was positive. I'm asymptomatic. My wife, who hasn't been tested, but they said 95% sure, also has the virus. Has some mild symptoms at this point. And my parents, 90 years old, both of them live with us in a separate apartment, and we've had to isolate from them. But thank God, knock on wood, we're in a good situation here. And, we're a fortunate family. So those healthcare workers, those hospital workers at Montefiore and the other hospitals in New York, they're the real heroes, the policemen, the firemen, the emergency workers going out every day and putting themselves at risk. You know, whatever we can do to support them.
Well, that has always been the way you handle life, and I think it's fantastic. When we get through on the other side, Manny, what's it going to look like? You've got stores that are in malls where you have offered great value, the heritage business. You've got the dominant brand, Tommy Hilfiger, the dominant brand, Calvin Klein. What will things look like when we're finished with COVID-19?
Look, Jim, I think this is going to be a painful process. Like the president has talked about it. Governor Cuomo here in New York, who's really taken a leadership role, he's talked about it. We're going to go through some pain here for the next month or two. But I think I think the industry will come through it. There will be, casualties. Secretary Mnuchin talked about that there's no way to avoid. There will be some levels of bankruptcies. Right. Retail is an industry that's being hit. Apparel retail as a discretionary item is going to be impacted. And I think when you look on the other side, I think, I've always felt that, prior to this, that over the next 5-6 years, our industry would go through some significant consolidation. And I think this is only going to accelerate that consolidation as we go forward. And it probably will accelerate some of the store closings that need to take place. And I think it'll make us a more efficient industry, but there will be pain going through it. There's no doubt about it. My job, I think, is to try to get PVH to the other side. And when I talk about heroes, right. I talk about the people at PVH that have just done an amazing job, are people who've been taking care of their families, their children that are home, and at the same time that they're homeschooling and taking care of their kids, they're on the phone with our retail accounts trying to manage the order book for spring and fall. We've got merchandise and inventory coordinators that are trying to deal with the sourcing network in Asia and looking at how we can manage our supply chain. And at the same time, they're dealing with family commitments and they're dealing with elderly parents, but at the same time, getting it done for PVH. You know, when you talk about leadership, that's leadership.
All right.
And I've been so impressed with how our people in North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia have really stepped up and been able to do their jobs from home, been able to take on the burdens that we're all feeling and the stress and pressure we're all feeling in our business life and in our personal life. And I think, you know, that's been a model as we go forward.
Well, Manny, thank you so much. I'm glad that you're feeling well. I'm glad that your team is doing such a remarkable job. And thank you for everybody, because Montefiore is an unbelievable hospital. Great to see you, sir. It's Manny Chirico, Chairman, CEO, PVH. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Let's start with Josh in California. Josh.
Hey, Jim. How are you doing?
I am doing well, Josh. How are you?
Good. My grandpa and I are longtime watchers. I was wondering if it's a good idea to sell Dunkin' because coffee and donuts aren't as high demand right now.
I think it's okay to sell it, frankly. My Chapel Trust owns Starbucks, taking it for a long-term view, and got big China exposure, which actually going to be positive. But I would say take a pass on Dunkin'. Let's go to Joseph in Connecticut. Joseph.
Hey, James.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I am good. How about you?
Okay, thank you. Where do I start here?
I don't know.
thank you for all the help you do for us.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
A shout out to your daughter out in Spain. I hope she gets home safe when she wants to come home.
Well put. Well put, sir.
And I say that because I'm a brand new grandfather and I can't see my grandson. He's in California.
Yeah, this is some time. This is some time. I hope this thing ends soon. How can I help?
I am calling about Virgin Galactic.
Well, that's a very speculative stock. You know, it ran all the way up. It had an incredible run, frankly. It went up to 42, but it was a short squeeze. There were so many people betting against it. At these levels, it's come all the way back down. I say it's a decent spec. It's not my favorite because I think I would prefer, if you want spec, I would actually go with Tesla. Let's go to Majid in Michigan. Majid.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Doing well. Thank you. So I'm currently investing in the market, positioning myself long-term. Considering that oil is hovering around $20, wanted to get your thoughts on Marathon Oil, MRO.
I think you have to look, when you look at Marathon, you have to look at the debt side. I think that they have, when you see these big yields and you see these stocks really low, it tends to mean that the credit side is not strong. If you want to own an oil, and I do not encourage it, the only one that I think has the balance sheet to get through this period unscathed is Chevron, and it yields 7.5%, and they're deeply committed to that dividend. Let's go to Pat in North Carolina. Pat.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for all your good advice and words of wisdom.
Oh, thank you, Pat.
Back in 2004, I bought some IDEX stock when they were working on a vaccine for mad cow. And I'm wondering now if they are doing anything with the CV-19. Are they working on that also?
You know, I don't know. I've got to call them. My contact with the company has retired, sadly, because he's the greatest Chinese. But I will tell you this. I like Chewy, which I think is a way to get food, you know, pet food into your house. I also like Nestle's, by the way, because they own Purina, and they do a great job. Fresh Pet has got some unbelievable numbers, too. There's a lot of great humanization of pet stories that are out there. Let's go to Drew in Connecticut, please. Drew.
Brother Jimmy Chill.
Yo, man, the Chill Man's in the house. What's going on?
Hey, sincere thanks for fighting the good fight in these times.
Thank you.
My stock is Procter & Gamble.
Procter & Gamble's had some unbelievable numbers in the last 2 months. The numbers there are probably stronger for their business than I can ever recall. Procter & Gamble with a 2.7% yield, a great balance sheet, is a buy. Buy Procter & Gamble. Let's go to Steve in Maryland. Steve.
Hey, a big sanitized booyah to you. Stay safe. Hey,
yeah, let me give you some.
Still pretty hot on. I got a nice position in First Horizon. You had this guy on about a month or so ago.
You know, Brian Jordan is terrific. This thing yields 8%. I mean, unless someone, I talked to Secretary Mnuchin, he's not talking about getting rid of the bank dividends like they're doing over in Europe. Brian runs a fantastic bank in the strongest part of the country. I understand there's got to be loan forgiveness, but I think at $8, wow, I mean, $7, enough. Enough with the selling. Let's go to Tom in New York, please. Tom.
Hi, Jimmy. This is Tom from New Jersey.
All right, buddy.
A couple weeks ago, good. I spoke with you a couple weeks ago about going into cash. And today my question is in regards to Apache Energy.
Yeah, that's the worst performing stock in the S&P. I have to tell you, I know Mr. Crispin's a good man, but they did, you know, they did this thing in the Alpine High. They wrote it off. They've got too much gas, not enough oil. It's just not a good situation. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
You can learn a lot about a market by looking at its winners and its losers. Take the five best and worst performers from that miserable quarter that just ended in the S&P. The biggest winners, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. That's run by the great Len Schleifer. I think Regeneron has the best hope for fighting the pandemic, which is why it rallied 30% in the last 3 months. They're working on both the treatment that alleviates COVID's most lethal symptoms and on a vaccine. Len was our first guest ever on Mad Money 15 years ago. He's not a dreamer or a schemer. He's a realist. In fact, only a month ago, he was pretty downbeat about what Regeneron would be able to do against the scourge. But lately, he's become a lot more optimistic because he thinks they might really have something. By the way, Len put out a brilliant infrastructure plan for our country in a New York Times op-ed piece last year. He wanted us to fund a massive infrastructure bank backed by a special tax on public companies, tax that we paid in stock. I thought it was a really cool idea, but now the economy's in such dire straits, I think it makes more sense for the government just to borrow a gigantic amount, 30-year war bonds, coronavirus war bonds. The second biggest winner is Citrix. Okay, we just covered this company. It helps remote workers stay connected with their colleagues. It's the original collaboration software. Citrix is a seasoned company, part of my barbell list from last night. And while it already vaulted 38% the last quarter, you know what? I think it's actually got more room to run. Third is Netflix. I know we've seen lots of surveys purporting to show that Netflix may not be doing that well right now. I could care less. What matters is that they can raise prices dramatically if they really want to. We got nothing to do, right? Everyone accept it. We're starved for entertainment. There's not even many sports. Stock was up 16% last quarter. Seems too low for me. Fourth is Digital Realty. It's a real estate investment trust that owns data center properties. With everyone using the cloud to work from home, the data center is on fire. That's how Digital Realty, this is a REIT, by the way, rallied 16%. I like it here, 3.3% yield, but I'd like it a little more on a pullback. Finally, there's Gilead, up 15%. Now, here's another drug company that's working on ways to fight the virus. In Gilead's case, they're testing an antiviral. I sure hope it works, but makes sense. I'd rather just buy Regeneron. All right, how about the worst performers? You're going to see some common themes here. No real mystery. Energy, right? Been annihilated by the collapse in oil prices, $20 a barrel. Remember, I didn't like the oils even when crude was in the 40s. Remember, I told you I thought that the environmental world was turning against them. I hope you got out when I said get out, and then get out again. Down here, they're still very tough to own. Apache used to be a terrific international energy company. Then they sold off their far-flung properties, made a huge bet on the wrong part of the Permian Basin, wrote it off. Stock started the year at 21. Now at 4, down 84%. Stocks, at least they stop at zero. Second and third worst are a pair of cruise lines, Norwegian Cruise and Royal Caribbean, down 81 and 76% respectively. We've had all these companies. They're incredibly well run. They offer a very popular service. They're inexpensive service. But now cruises are totally off limits until people get over the industry's unique exposure to COVID-19. As we've seen over and over again, you don't want to be stuck on a cruise ship during a pandemic. Royal Caribbean in particular strikes me as a good house in one of the worst neighborhoods on earth. Maybe it can bounce, but I really want you to avoid these stocks that are right in the coronavirus blast zone. The last two, Marathon Oil, Noble Energy, They're the fourth and fifth worst performers in the S&P, and these are terrific energy companies, frankly. Solid, excellent properties. But none of that matters with crude at $20 a barrel and Permian going for $10. After the bankruptcy today of Whiting Petroleum, even the best oil producers are nothing more than a dice roll, and we're going to see many more bankruptcies. I wish I could say buy an oil. I just can't. Maybe there's a bounce after the president meets with some of the oil execs later this week. If we get a bounce at all, sell it. In the end, I think the winners from the first quarter keep winning as long as the pandemic rages. The losers, I bet they keep losing. Andrew in Maryland, please. Andrew.
Booyah, Kramer.
Booyah, Andrew.
Question is, how heavily impacted will Six Flags be by coronavirus since they've extended closures until mid-May and potentially in the summer months? And how could it affect their bottom line, and will they be able to rebound?
I think that it's going to be very rough for them. It's a suboptimal situation. I don't think it's worth the risk to get that 8.7% yield. And I think you're going to have to take a pass on that one. I think it's just too hard to own. All right. Well, we got the list. Winners and losers. Winners are going to stay winners. Losers can still lose. Stick with Kramer. This volatility is unheard of, people. Use it to reevaluate your portfolio.
You're the best.
Thank you very much for your show and advice throughout the years.
We have your back, and we will get through it together.
Thanks for always being willing to stick your neck out and give us your honest, informed opinion.
I want you to know we appreciate you trying to help us out.
I am there for you, all right? These times, I am playing for you. You get every bit of my knowledge. I'm just trying to do my best for you. We always get through these together. Will this time be any different? No. Without some breakthrough in science, we're going to go back and test last week's lows. Remember, we have 19.9% at one point last week. And maybe we go through them without some good corporate news. It's not a great time. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Our special Markets in Turmoil starts right now.